Welcome to Southeast Stories, bringing you memorable stories from the leader and best. As always, here with my producer, Mason. Mason's snacking on a gyro over there. How's that gyro tasting, Mace?
Sponsor us, Amos.
We hope you've been enjoying these episodes of Southeast Stories, and wanted to put it out there that if any of you out there have ideas or great stories, you can reach out to us at www.southeaststories.com and put in a plug for an interview or a guest idea. Our guest this week is Scott DeRue. Scott is probably best known as the Dean of the Ross School of Business, and we camped out in the new 710 East Cafe located within Blau Hall to talk to him about his lessons learned as a world-class climber. Shout out to our sponsors, Underground Printing. Go to Underground Printing to get your custom printed apparel needs taken care of, business groups, organizations, events, you name it. And also Destination Ann Arbor, promoting Ann Arbor as a destination of choice for travelers. Visit annarbor.org to learn more about where to stay and what to do. And now, world-class climber Scott DeRue. Scott DeRue, the Dean of the Ross School of Business. Scott, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We are sitting in the 710 East, the new 710 East coffee shop powered by Zingerman's Coffee. And if you haven't checked it out, it's awesome. The entrance is off of East University. So when you're in town or if you live in town, come check it out. And Scott and I have known each other for a long time, and I begged him. No, I didn't have to beg. He offered so nicely to be on the podcast. And Scott is well known for being the dean of the Ross School of Business, also a well-known professor in the area of leadership. But what many people don't know is that Scott is an avid climber. And we're not talking like hikes up, you know, this trail or that trail. We're talking about Scott has summited six of the seven peaks. And other than Everest, I don't know any of them. So Scott, tell us what are the seven summits and which one is the one that you have left to climb?
So seven summits are the tallest mountain on each of the seven continents.
Okay, got it right.
So North America would be Denali or McKinley up in Alaska. And South America would be on the border of Argentina and Chile, a mountain called Aconcagua.
Okay. I didn't try that one.
Yeah. So then in Africa, you got Mount Kilimanjaro, which a lot of people know. In Europe, you have a mountain in southern Russia right on the Georgian border called Mount Elbrus.
Okay.
Then Asia would be Mount Everest, the tallest mountain in the world. Antarctica would be Mount Vinson.
Oh, okay.
Which is a beautiful, just magical place.
Okay.
And then the seventh, which I have not done, is the Oceanic continent. So Australia and all those South Pacific islands.
Got it.
And there's a little island off the coast of Indonesia that has a mountain on it called Karstens Pyramid.
It's a great name. Great name for a mountain.
Yeah. And super excited. Two of my friends and I are going to go in March of 2020 and climb Karstens.
Yeah.
And if the stars align and the weather cooperates, after March, we will have completed the seven summits.
Knocking on wood on that one. And what does that club look like that is the people that have climbed seven summits? How big is that club?
Yeah, we're talking hundreds, not thousands.
That's amazing.
And certainly it would be an honor to be among that group of adventurers and explorers and folks that really challenge themselves. And there's even a smaller club of folks that have done the Explorer's Grand Slam, which is the seven summits and the two poles, North and South Pole, and had the privilege of visiting the South Pole.
I remember that
recently. And if the ice doesn't melt with the North Pole, maybe we'll visit that sometime soon, or maybe we'll just swim there. Who knows?
It still counts, if you swim there.
Yes, yeah. As long as you hit that GPS coordinate,
right,
you're good.
All right, that's fair. All right, that sounds good. So knowing this about you, I thought it would be, you can tell hundreds of stories about business and your experiences there, but I really wanted you to tell a couple stories lessons learned, life lessons from your experiences climbing. So I was wondering if you would talk about that.
Sure. So I got into mountaineering because I was fascinated with the group aspect of it.
Yeah.
Imagine tying a group of people who often don't know each other, tying them together with a rope and saying, go climb that very dangerous mountain together.
Yeah.
How do you build trust? How do you communicate? How do you make decisions? Everything that we study about leadership and teamwork and business and organizations, it plays out in this really intense environment on mountains. And so I've always just been fascinated by that. And that's why I originally got involved. So I'll give you two. People are generally fascinated by Everest, tallest mountain in the world. And it makes the news every spring.
It's the one people know.
Exactly. And so I'll give you a couple of stories from that experience that taught me a lot that I consider sort of these deep, profound life lessons, at least for me. So the first is really about strength and vulnerability.
Okay.
Mountaineering attracts a certain type of person. It's often somebody that's really achievement oriented.
Yeah.
What some people may call type A folks.
Overachiever.
Overachiever type of person, right? But it's also interesting because it also attracts people that are often quite humble. And folks that understand that the mountain's bigger than them and you're there for the experience and the journey. And so it's this interesting mix. And so you find people that are really transparent and vulnerable, and you find people who aren't. And we were about 25,000 feet above sea level on Everest around Camp 3. And it's on this face called the Lhotse face that's really steep.
Okay.
Really dangerous. If you fall, really bad things happen.
Got it.
It was cold. It was really cold. I mean, we live in Michigan. It can be cold here.
Right.
It was one of the coldest days I've had in my life.
Crazy.
And you've got these boots on that are unbelievable at keeping your feet warm. And my feet were so cold. I was convinced my toes were going to fall off.
And you were at Camp 3. So where does that, for people that don't know, how many camps are there?
So there's base camp and then four camps. Base camp, Camp 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the summit. And the mountain's a little over 29,000 feet. And so Camp 3, depending on where you're at, a little above or a little below it, let's call it in that 25,000 sort of range. There's not a lot of air up there, put it that way.
Right. Got it. You're getting close to the summit.
It's real at that point.
Got it.
You still have a long ways to go, but it's real. Mm-hmm. And, the dangers are they're in the foreground of your mind.
Yeah.
And so my feet were really, really cold, and I was climbing behind our lead guide, Garrett Madison, dear friend, exceptional climber, arguably the world's best big mountain guide. Garrett and I know each other. We trust each other. We've climbed with each other a number of times. And I yelled out to him. I said, Garrett, my feet are really cold. I don't know what to do. And his response to me, I'll never forget. He's like, mine are too. And Rishi, I don't know if his feet were cold or not. I actually speculate that they weren't.
He was fine.
He was fine.
Yeah.
But he was likely showing empathy with me.
Right.
And he said, Scott, if they stop hurting, tell me, because then we have a problem.
Oh, interesting.
And so that gave me some reassurance, and it told me that I wasn't alone, because presumably his feet were cold too, and we were going to get through this together.
Right.
But that vulnerability comes with risk, because if he's very conservative, say inexperienced, he could turn me around.
Yeah.
And stop my summit bid.
Right.
And I've spent a lot of money to be there, a lot of time training, a lot of energy, et cetera. And so there's a level of trust that's required there to expose yourself in some sense and be vulnerable to that other person. But that's what it is about building a team.
Right.
Right. Is I've got to be vulnerable to you and trust you, knowing that you're going to be vulnerable back to me and trust me as well. And I'll contrast that with a team that had a friend of mine on it that was climbing a couple days behind us. And basically at the same point on the mountain, a little above, his feet started getting cold as well. And he wouldn't tell his guide because he was afraid his guide was going to turn him around.
Didn't have the trust.
And played that out. And then, a day or so later, they're on their way to the summit. They get to the summit. And this is after we had summited and come back down. And he gets to the summit and he can't walk.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, he's put his entire team at risk.
Right.
And it all dates back to this, traces back to this idea that he couldn't tell his guide.
Yes.
That he was struggling.
Right.
And now his entire team's got to rally to get him down safely. Unfortunately, they did. But, you know, his feet were black with frostbite.
Wow.
All because he wasn't willing to be vulnerable to his leadership, if you will, or his team.
Right.
And so it really taught me the power and vulnerability and the importance of trust. We all know trust is important.
Right. But it's one thing to say it, but that's how you actually act on it, right?
And I mean, if you look at definitions of trust, the most commonly word used to describe it is vulnerability.
Right.
And if I know in the leadership positions I'm in, if I want to build trust in my team, the way to do that is to be vulnerable.
Right.
And I'll never forget that lesson.
That's an amazing story. And a practical application when you're just talking about trust, like, oh yeah, I trust you, or you got to trust your team, but that's life and death right there, or life and limb.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Another one that I'll never forget, same mountain on Everest. Most people, when they think about their goals on Everest, what do you think the most common goal is for climbing Everest?
Got to get to the top.
Right. Yeah. And that's what people want to be able to take the picture and right. send it to their family. And
post it on Instagram right away.
Precisely. Right.
Do they get cell service at the top of Everest?
They do. Actually.
Oh, they do. Oh,
and so now, nowadays you can call people and text people from the summits and whatnot. But
that's funny.
That wasn't my goal. My goal is to get to the top and back down safely.
Oh,
you know,
right.
I mean, Kathy, my wife,
yes.
She and I have a deal, right? I'm coming back and I'm coming back with my limbs, my toes, my
right.
fingers,
yes.
et cetera. And no mountain is more important than that.
Right.
Right.
So your goal can't just be the top. You have to make it all the way back down.
Absolutely.
Right.
And getting down is actually more difficult, more technically challenging. And it's also because people get complacent,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they get to the top and they think they've accomplished their goal,
right?
And they let their guard down.
Right.
And so I've got a great video from the summit, from our GoPro cameras on our helmets.
Yeah.
And the wind's blowing, but it's clear. You can see forever and you can hear the voices.
Yeah.
And one of my teammates goes, "We did it. We accomplished our goal." And you hear me in the background saying, "No, we haven't." We're only halfway there.
Way to be the downer.
but that's important because it emphasizes focus.
Yeah.
Right. And keeping your eye on the prize, keeping
right.
your eye on the goal. And I'll tell a related story that brings that to life as to why that's so important. So we summited on May 18th, okay. 2013. The most memorable day for me of that entire trip is not May 18th. It's May 19th on our way down. One of our team members, who's an unbelievable climber, became one of the first 10 or so people in history to climb 2 8,000-meter peaks within 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
So we summited Everest. We came back down to Camp 4. He went to sleep, slept for a few hours, and then got up and went and climbed Lhotse, the adjacent mountain, all within 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
And on our way down, he got complacent and made some gear choices. And on our way down, he ended up slipping and falling. And because of the gear choices that he had made, in particular his gloves, as soon as you fall, you grab the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have the right gloves on. And it burned through the gloves and burned through his hands.
Oh,
and then
wow.
you let go. And he actually slid a good part of the way down the Lhotse face,
wow.
which is really dangerous.
Yeah.
And he's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it was we were very lucky.
Yeah.
And it was very scary.
Yeah.
But it really taught me the importance of having a clear goal
mm-hmm.
and staying focused on that goal
yeah.
until the end
right.
and not allowing the team to really trick itself into thinking that it's achieved something special before
right.
it really has.
Right. It's about picking the right goal, because if your goal is short-sighted, you actually end up not achieving the ultimate goal. Right.
That's right.
So, that's a really interesting story. And I think it's awesome how, and probably you're in the moment of climbing and this is just all happening. And then you come back and reflect on it a month later, a week later, a month later, a year later. And you're like, oh, wow, like that's absolutely corollary to what I'm dealing with now. Or absolutely, you know, something I can tell someone about setting the right goal or trust in general. Right. And that I think it's cool because it it brings these things to light in a way that you wouldn't normally see.
100%. I mean, every day here at the University of Michigan, something happens in terms of group dynamics or leadership or so forth. And there's a thought that runs through my mind of I've seen that on some mountain somewhere.
Right, right, right.
And I'm sure my team gets, I don't use these stories often, but I'm sure every time I do, they're like, here we go again, right? But it's so powerful and vivid.
Yeah.
It brings it to life in a way that people, I think, can resonate with.
Well, when you're 6 of 7 and about to hit the club, like, you get to tell those stories. That's there's a whole podcast there. Like, you could start your own podcast on those stories, which is well worth it.
Yeah,
sure.
I tend to be in the category of hopefully at least on the more humble side of that equation.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, when people are interested in the stories, I'm more than happy to talk about them. But for me, it's never been, there's a great quote in climbing about, what do you climb for? Mm-hmm. Do you climb to plant your flag on top of the mountain and have everybody see it?
Right.
Or do you climb essentially for the experience of the journey, and the meaning that's behind it? Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely in that latter category. I mean, it's life-changing. It's humbling. But I just love climbing and experiencing these moments with very special people.
Yeah, that's well put, well said. So, well, thanks so much for coming on. And as you achieve some of these goals, maybe we'll have you back on to tell some more stories.
Would love to.
Good to see you.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.